Pastor Mai, hello and welcome to this episode of Agenda. I'm Ewan Gorn. A night shelter pilot scheme run by homelessness charity GRI has revealed 59 people used the facility over the last year. The charity has also warned the quality of cheap private accommodation can be very poor and says some landlords often seek to exploit vulnerable tenants. The Policy and Reform Minister Chris Thomas says the figures from the night shelter are unsettling, but promises work is ongoing to improve the quality of accommodation in the private sector. Homelessness charity GRI revealed last week that bed spaces were taken up 534 times from January 2019 to 2020 by 59 different guests. The organisation also helps people pay deposits and assists, where possible, those in private accommodation. GRI managers Michael Manning and Erica Irwin told me the quality of homes in this sector varies greatly.
Well, it's a real mixed bag. You've got some of the private accommodation is fantastic. You know, you've got some landlords out there and their accommodation is good quality, it's clean, it's safe, and they really look after the tenants there. And then you've got the other scale where some of the accommodation is cold, it's damp, landlords don't turn heating on in the buildings, and you do have a wide variety.
Certainly at the bottom end, you know, we've got some landlords who are using the system to exploit vulnerable tenants. Landlords know what the benefit system pays, you know, so you'll have people who turn up to a house of multiple occupancy, often an onboarding house. Landlord will say to you, if you're working, I'll rent you this room for £70 a week. But we know that benefits pay £116 a week as their maximum towards rent. So if you're on benefits, we'll just charge you £116 a week.
So there are private landlords that deliberately play that system?
Oh, yeah.
Absolutely. And that's, you know, they're very shrewd business people who are there making money, and they're using the private, the public purse to make private profit.
And how do you guys know this? Do you know this through the experiences of your guests or anecdotally? Or
we know this both through the experiences of our guests and because we're often the ones paying the deposits to those landlords.
Yeah, I was going to say, sometimes people come and we do help them financially, and the individual come and say, this is the amount that's needed. And then when I phone up, because I don't give the individual the money, I go straight to the landlord, that suddenly the price is much higher because they know that we're paying it.
So even when you intervene, the price goes up and then you're manipulated again.
Yeah.
So what can tenants do when they're in this poor accommodation? Is there anything they can do to flag up the poor quality of some of these living conditions?
There are some regulations in terms of environmental health and fire regulations for houses of multiple occupancy, which is great. There is very little recourse for tenants for bad landlord business practice, you know, for no tenancy agreements, landlords entering into rooms, lack of sanitation, cooking facilities, that kind of thing, deposit withholding. Unfortunately, for some of the most vulnerable tenants, it's very, very difficult for them to pursue claims. You won't want to report your landlord for fear of losing your accommodation or for fear of being getting a reputation as a troublemaker, which means you're less likely to get accommodation with another landlord in the private sector. We live on a small island. People talk to one another. The landlords are in close contact with one another. So there are a number of factors that discourage tenants from reporting problems, even when they exist. Quite apart from the fact that we're often talking about very vulnerable tenants, often dealing with chronic mental and physical health problems, and so their capacities to deal with landlord complaints about their accommodation becomes even more limited.
So would you say that it's very much stacked in the favour of landlords at the moment in terms of power over flagging up inadequate accommodation or the whole arrangements that take place between tenants and landlords at the moment?
Yeah, I think landlords have the upper hand at the moment. I mean, we don't even know how many landlords are out there at the moment in the private sector. Hopefully that will change in the future. But at the moment, you know, you can have landlords out there. We haven't got a clue who they are, where they are. And so to actually try and make sure that fair practice is happening and our guys, our people who are using the accommodation are being protected, it makes that quite difficult. I know there's times where I've even tried to get some deposit back from a landlord because I know of an individual that's moved out and it was us that paid the deposit, and just the hoops you sometimes have to pay, you know, jump through, or they'll say they trash the room and you know that that person doesn't do that or didn't do that, and it's really hard to prove that.
And what legal sort of means or recourse have you got, and are GRI in a position where they can, or tenants ever in a position where they can make legal challenges, or is that just out of the question?
The small claims court is available for people to go to for deposits, and that would be the most appropriate route in the current system as we have it. Again, unfortunately, you're talking about capacity for tenants to access the small claims court, particularly if you've just lost your accommodation. You've
it's
got a whole
stressful.
Load of other priorities on your mind rather than pursuing a legal case. GRI would be happy to help tenants with that. And we've also had conversations with some advocates who've been supportive of us with that as well. But I think the certainly the balance of power is stacked in the favour of landlords at the moment who are not facing those same barriers. And there need to be protections for landlords, absolutely. We're talking about vulnerable and often chaotic tenants who may not be the best tenants. You need to have protections for landlords. That's absolutely the case. And we work well, very effectively, with some fantastic landlords in the private sector. But at the moment, the system is certainly leading to not only the exploitation of the public purse for private profit of the landlords, but also to the exploitation of very vulnerable tenants as well. GRI sees people who are really at the bottom end of the accommodation and are really struggling often with chronic problems. And we think it raises far wider questions about the sort of accommodation we want to see on the island for some of our most vulnerable people.
Is having a safe and secure accommodation, when people come to you as guests, is that the first thing you're looking to establish? Is that the most important thing?
I think it's one of the first questions. When someone comes to us, we find out their situation and what's going on. We'll link them in with housing matters in order to try and get that ball rolling as soon as possible. Because actually, I know housing masters have been really struggling to find places for people, and so to get that rolling straight away is really important. We know that when people stay with us in the night shelter, it's better than being out on the street. It's a safe, it's a warm place to stay where we've got staff on who are awake, so it's secure. But even those who stay there, even the most healthiest of person, their mental health and their physical health will deteriorate the longer they're with us. Some people that happens much quicker, and then others actually they can withstand a little bit more time, but it's literally we have people staying with us just whilst they're waiting for accommodation to come forward or for.
So has the market changed then in the private sector? Has it shrunk?
I think certainly from conversations and our work with Housing Matters, particularly, who work more closely with landlords directly than GRI does over the past couple of years, there's been a big constriction in terms of availability within the private sector, and particular constrictions in terms of age and access to benefits as well. Landlords will discriminate on their tenants in terms of not wanting to rent to people under 25, not wanting to let rooms or accommodation to people who are in receipt of benefits.
Is that not open to legal challenge under the days of the equalities legislation? And
absolutely. I mean, we've just had the equality legislation come into force, I think last month fully, which makes certainly discrimination on age questionable, at least. I'm not an advocate, but I would certainly suggest that there are questions to be asked.
But a tenant, as you mentioned, would not be in a position to be able to challenge
Our tenants would not be, and certainly the people that GRI has contact with. It's important to point out we're dealing with a very niche minority at GRI. We're dealing with people who are really struggling at the very, very bottom end of accommodation. But it's absolutely the case that without safe and stable accommodation, all the other problems that people have, mental ill health, physical ill health, the other challenges that they're facing in their lives, become even more difficult to address when you don't have safe and stable accommodation. One of our greatest frustrations is, as a sticking plaster charity, we provide the basic shelter, the basic food to people who are hungry, the emergency stuff. You've got to do that. Of course you do. Morally, you've got to do that, I would suggest. But it's so frustrating to see people stuck on a cycle of chaotic accommodation. They're in a private sector rental for a few weeks. Then they're thrown out of that. That's sometimes justified. Often it's not. They might be in prison. They might be in hospital for a period of time. Then they're back on the streets. They're back with us in the shelter and the cycle starts again.
Well, how do you break that cycle?
How you break that cycle is providing proper quality, safe, secure accommodation, whether that's through a hostel environment for some of your most chaotic people, where they have a more structured environment where they can live for a number of months and learn some of the skills about what it means to be a good tenant and how you live independently, all that kind of thing, whether it's proper support for people and their tenancies out in the community, private or public sector, community houses, supported accommodation. GRI has been talking about the need for supported accommodation for some of our most vulnerable people for a number of years, and we think that continues to be a huge gap on the island that will make a massive difference.
So why, in a very affluent society in which we live, can we not provide that?
I don't know.
Well, It's a good question. You know, we're talking about the pilot emergency night shelter project has just come to an end. So therefore, the funding that we had for that year has just finished. We've just been doing a shout out, you know, saying, you know, if you're interested in learning more about that, or if you want to come on board and support us financially, you know, we'd love that. But again, we're having to sit here and ask people to sort of help us, you know. At the end of January, that's where the pot of money finished. It ended
for
the shelter. And then we've managed to get an anonymous donor, a donation, and Elizabeth Klukas Trust have managed to give us some money that is going to see our work, so that's the whole of the work that we do, through to early summer. And then we went out of money for Gry. You know, and so we're having conversations with government, we're having conversations with, you know, Manx Lottery Trust again, and with churches and with businesses and things, just to try and help us find some finances to move forward. But it's a continuous thing of trying to find the finances. There's no legislation on the island for homelessness, so there's no government statutory obligation to actually do anything.
Well, is that needed? Because I suppose from your perspective, you don't want to be going every year just funding yourself to the next year, finding funding again. It needs a permanent solution, doesn't it?
Exactly. You know, and one of the difficulties of being a very tiny charity working in this area, as many charities working in difficult areas, is that you just lurch from one funding cliff edge to another, which is no good for any sort of sustainable work for our guests, for our staff, for anything. I think it makes a really important statement about a society. Legislation makes an important statement about a society, about who we value and why. And I think it does make a statement at the moment that we don't have any statutory obligations or legislation around homelessness and housing. No right to housing on the Isle of Man, no statutory response to housing on the Isle of Man for people who are in accommodation crisis. So I think we need to think carefully as a society about who we value and why. We're dealing with some of the most vulnerable people. We're not dealing with thousands and thousands of people. It's a problem that can be effectively addressed. We know what works. You've got agencies such as GRI, such as Housing Matters, who've been working for well over a decade, pioneering work in this area, effectively building coalitions of support with the police, with benefits, with health and social care. So you've got a lot of really effective work going on that just simply needs to be properly resourced on a sustainable basis. Where that funding comes from is up for debate, but I think without that sustainability, the most vulnerable people are always going to be left behind and really struggling. And I think that makes a powerful statement about who we are as a people together on the Isle of Man.
GRI managers Michael Manning and Erica Irwin. You're listening to Agenda on Manx Radio. Housing Matters works closely with GRI and also caters for hundreds of people facing homelessness and who need emergency accommodation. Alex Watton went to the charity's offices in Douglas and spoke to Katie Farrell and Julie Marshall to see how they match up with GRI.
We've seen an increase in people of no fixed abode, certainly over the last 12 months. There's 202 of no fixed abode out of our 508 numbers. 29% of those have been due to a relationship or family breakdown, so they're usually displaced quite quickly. We do refer a lot of people to GRI for the night shelter. There's various reasons for people being of no fixed abode. We've had some street homeless that haven't gone to the night shelter, for instance, some sleeping in vehicles, some domestic abuse and violence victims. There's certainly a lot of people sofa surfing on the island, so they might not necessarily come and seek help because they're getting help from their sort of immediate friendship groups. So I'd say, because we don't see a lot of people rough sleeping on the streets like they do in the UK, it's a very hidden problem here. So there are a lot more that would maybe need help that would not come forward because they're continually moving around friends' houses.
In what ways has the night shelter then helped the work that Housing Matters does?
It means that we can signpost someone to GRI and there is somewhere for them to go, whereas previously, if they were, it was only volunteers that covered the night shelter. If they didn't have a volunteer available, they couldn't open the night shelter. So to have permanent staff there, it means that it's open every night, and that's a backstop for a few people.
A night shelter fundamentally is a temporary fix for a what's likely to be a much bigger problem. Where do the solutions long term come from?
We encourage people to certainly go onto housing lists. The Department of Infrastructure Housing, very supportive of what we do, and all boroughs and the commissioners. But our private landlords, they're full. We've got waiting lists for landlords. We are struggling. Since the start of the year, since January,
We've seen 75 cases opened. Now, if you take that was 508 in total last year, and we're still not even the middle of February, but we opened 18 cases last week. We've never had that. And currently we've got 130 open cases. The reason we've got such a huge caseload is because we have nowhere to put people. So there's nowhere out there for us to house people. We're struggling. It is a huge problem. So people are on our books longer than they ever used to be. Certainly when we started 4 years ago, we could house people that day. Right. And now it's nearly impossible to do that.
People are full and that there are waiting lists to get into housing. Mm. What are those waiting lists like?
It's a bit of a fluid thing because it depends when somebody moves out or moves on to maybe local authority housing, then they've got a vacancy. So one day they'll have nothing, the next day they might have two rooms because somebody's moved in with a partner or they've actually got allocated a house. So there's no science to it, unfortunately.
Katie Farrell and Julie Marshall from Housing Matters. The issue of homelessness was discussed by the Council of Ministers last week. While joining me to discuss the figures from GRAI and the announcements by Housing Matters was Policy and Reform Minister Chris Thomas. I asked for his view on the situation.
Yeah, it's unsettling to us. There's no denying that we have an issue for some people with homelessness. Some of it's sofa surfing, but also, sadly, nearly 60 people spent at least one night on a rollout mattress in the basement of a church. That can't be right. It's really, really valuable that GRAI have provided this facility. Thank you so much to their volunteers, the staff who've worked for them for the last year, for the donors, Manx Public more generally, and also really appreciate data, because data doesn't change anything. Investigating something doesn't change anything. What matters is action, but we've got to make sure we do the right things, and I think government's trying to do the right things.
So what action is being taken?
Firstly, we're trying to improve the quality of the accommodation that people live in, the private sector mostly, but sometimes also in the public sector. So there's a landlord registration bill in this year's legislation programme.
So we could expect that within the next year to come forward?
In 2020, yeah. I hope by the end of this parliamentary year. If not, it'll be in the autumn.
And will that require landlords to adopt certain standards when it comes to dealing with tenants?
And there are already standards. So housing, multiple occupation flats are now at a higher standard, and part of the issue why Housing Matters has had problems locating accommodation for people is that more and more of the accommodation no longer meets the standards. Mm. So there are, it also links in with why in the census we found that there were unoccupied places in Douglas, flats and apartments in Douglas, because those places can't be let out anymore because they don't meet the standards.
Yeah. Will the bill be able to protect against discrimination? Because that's been mentioned that certain tenants are discriminated against based on the fact they claim benefits, based on the fact there may have been problems with other landlords. So will it protect against that?
Well, Equality Act deals with some aspects of discrimination, and history is a difficult issue. So let's come on to that. The second point is that the benefits system, the income-related benefits system, is used to pay for people's rent. We've worked on that, so Treasury, through its Social Security division, has been meeting the charities to make sure that they can find some way of helping people into accommodation. And that's beginning to get to the nub of what government's trying to do. This is a difficult situation, Ewan. We're talking about troubled people with troubled lives, difficult lives, sometimes related to mental health issues, addiction issues, relationship breakdowns, poverty in terms of income, because jobs are hard to hold down when you haven't got a house. So government's moving towards a housing first policy, I hope, and we're currently investigating how we would do that. The idea being, if you have a roof over your head, you're in a better position to hold down a job and to build good relationships with other people and to basically have a better life. So we've got a report coming back to Council Ministers this year on that. And that's...
So is building more housing or making more housing available in the private sector or releasing social housing? What are you looking at?
Well, certainly social housing is an important part of it. And so therefore all the reforms that the Department of Infrastructure has done to reducing the housing waiting list for social housing from 1,600 down to just over 600 or 700 will help in that sense. Mm. But more importantly, perhaps, given that we've identified these people who are using GRI have got difficult lives, we're talking about supported living environments. So there are some projects going on for people coming out of prison, for people with particular social issues that need help in supported environments. And so that's what government's doing. Government's actually trying to provide a sort of step-up system for housing. At one end, we've got the emergency facility that GRI's piloted, and we've got the results, and that's what we're talking. At the next stage up for that, we need some sort of supported living environment to get people, to help people get their lives back together. And beyond that, we've got private rented accommodation, we've got social housing, which can all help people turn themselves around using the skills they've undoubtedly got.
Okay, well, as the first port of call, GRI is a sticking plaster. They're wanting funding, £250,000 as of about summer. They need that money.
Yeah.
Government has contributed in the past. Will government continue to make contributions?
Yeah, perhaps. So the people who funded the pilot from the public sector originally were the Manx Lottery Trust. They can't do that over and over again because they've got other community projects to support. Mm. At one point, GRI wasn't sure that it could start the project, so Treasury came up with £10,000-£15,000, and a bit later on DHSC came up with a similar amount. So we've been approached for a contribution to £250,000, and there's two issues with that. Firstly, it's a huge extra sum compared to what we've previously been involved with. And secondly, government has to be much more structured about these things. It has to actually commission services. And
when the public hear that, do they understand what exactly you mean? They just see that there's a charity that's addressing a serious issue on the Isle of Man that requesting, in the context of the millions we pay out for social housing, quite a relatively insignificant sum in the grand scheme of things. Yeah. We'll hear more big sums in the budget. Mm-hmm. So why couldn't government just give them that helping hand alongside working at sustainable long-term solutions?
And it might be that the GRI way of doing it is the best way of doing it, but when this was first considered all the way back 15 years ago, there were a couple of venues in mind for this sort of facility, and ideally we want better facility than this for this sort of situation. And when you get to the large amounts of numbers like 250,000, we considered all this in a report that Tim Wood approved back in October, and it might be better to move over to a sort of bed and breakfast system.
But while you're looking at those, and it's important obviously to establish it, these people need a service right now.
And they've got the service through till at least June.
But what security is that for the charity? And what security is that to people who feel they may need to use it again?
Well,
to
people who are using,
in summer it might be up, it
people
could
who are
stop
using,
working.
People who are using the GRI facility don't use it for more than a few nights. That's the idea. GRI works very closely with Housing Matters. It works very closely with the food bank. And in fact, it works very closely with the police, mental health, social services from government, with Manx Housing Trust, to actually put people into a firmer environment. I think the main point that the public needs to hear is it's not pleasant, it's not helpful being on the floor on a mattress only for the nighttime hours in the basement of a church. What we all want is we want those people's lives to get back together again, for them to help them get themselves in a better place, and that's where social care comes in. I can absolutely assure you the police are working on this, because often it's the police who've referred people into the GRI facility. I can absolutely assure you that mental health and social care are meeting with wonderful people, Erica, Michael, and all the other people involved at GRI, and something will be worked out and is being worked out.
Well, it sounds like the promises of action without the when are we going to hear this? Because you've talked about this issue a lot. We've had reviews into poverty, several committees reports. You've been talking about impending reports. People hear about all these bits of documentation and stuff, and what they really want is you to say, this is what we're going to do right now.
Yeah, well, what we all want is we don't want anybody in the Isle of Man to need to sleep on the floor. What we really need is we want them to get over the issues that they have that have meant that they're having to demean themselves by going to sleep on the floor.
Why is it not a priority, I guess, is what I'm asking. Well, it doesn't appear to be with the delays we've had, or you know, you're saying there's still things coming. When are they coming?
There haven't been any delays except for the landlord and tenant bill. This pilot has run. The data will be analysed to understand more about the people who've involved.
With the promise of more analysis, I mean, obviously it's very important.
As I said to you, Ewan, the benefit system is now being operated in a more flexible way, so GRI can be a place and address to which benefits can be paid.
Benefits aren't good if you don't have anywhere to spend on rent because the private sector landlords have banned you from staying there.
Okay, well,
and you can't access social housing because the criteria too strict in that location.
We've taken, the DOI housing division has taken the waiting list down on social housing by 1,000. DOI housing division has improved the quality of social housing. In terms of private tenancies, we've improved the standards and we will now start improving the quality of the landlord-tenant registration arrangement. Action's been taken. It's not only that, it's also about helping social care make sure they help these people to help themselves.
Policy and Reform Minister Chris Thomas. Well, that's all from this programme. We'll be back with more from Agenda soon, and you can listen again to this episode online via the Manx Radio website or through Spotify. But for now, gurumayu and goodbye.